Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today I talk with Dylan Mengus about everything from how his dad won the land he grew up on in a blackjack game, why drawing matters, how to launch a design studio, and doing it all by prayer and plow, all right after this. As a designer, there's nothing more frustrating than laboring over the perfect design and having a t-shirt screen printer reproduce your work as a low-quality t-shirt. RealThread has the solution. RealThread creates super soft t-shirts people love to wear. RealThread has spent years perfecting an efficient and clear platform for you to be able to order the softest custom printed t-shirts you'll ever wear. RealThread is dedicated to your project with the utmost knowledge and expertise on creating super soft custom screen printed shirts. For free quotes, a quick answer to questions, and a high-res digital mock-up of your design, head over to realthread.com or simply call, email, text, or live chat with the RealThread team any day of the week. Plus, when you are ready, get up to $100 off your first order with RealThread. Just mention Creative South Podcast in the print notes at checkout or to your account executive. Are you ready to explore your creativity and meet a ton of new friends while you're doing it? Then head over to creativesouth.com right now and get your Creative South tickets. Join us April 6th through 9th in Columbus, Georgia for Creative South, where you come as friends and leave as family. If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/creativesouth. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. Plus, when you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts, and you could even get your own podcast episode. So please, help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. We'll make this efficient.
Okay.
All right. Take two of Dylan Mengus on the Creative South Podcast. Dylan, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Good to be here again.
Yes. Hopefully this time we won't have the clicky audio stuff that went on with the last one.
I hope not, too. If not, you're going to have a lot of editing to do.
Yeah.
I'm sorry in advance.
I've got another one that I recorded with Mark Hemian. Of Design Inc. a while back, and the clicking is, I was hoping I was going to be able to edit it out, but it's just like solid through it. So he and I are trying to get up and reschedule it, and trying to pin him down to do anything is like an act of Congress. That man is so busy.
Well, I'm not that busy, but I'll tell you what, if this gets really bad, let's find some really great audio clips of Stefan Sagmeister. And then we'll change the pitch. We'll kind of get the Austrian accent out of it, and then just pretend it's me. So
okay,
wherever the audio gets really bad, we'll just splice those in. If that's cool with you.
Sure. So when you were up at WMC Fest, were you able to check out his talk?
I did, and I gotta say that was the highlight of the weekend for me.
Yeah, that
did
was.
Did you see it?
I did. That was incredible. I was expecting for his to be fairly prolific, and he did not disappoint at all.
Agreed. I told somebody, actually a group of students this week, I was talking to over at CCAD here in Columbus, that he is eloquent, he's researched, he's funny, he's graceful, including for anybody listening to this that was there and stayed through the Q&A. There, if you remember, did you stay through that?
I did.
So the guy at the end that basically said, your presentation in terms of the visuals of this was not so hot. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he flat out told Stefan.
Yeah.
And there was an audible silence, you know, uncomfortable pause in the room. And I don't remember exactly how Stefan responded, but I remember very clearly thinking this is a guy who understands how to receive feedback, including negative, and how to respond in grace. I thought that was such an eloquent response that he gave, including the fact that he said, you know, you're kind of right. It's not the greatest visual thing I've ever made. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought I was really impressed by that too. Cause yeah, like you said, he basically said, no, you're right. It is what it is. So
yeah,
that was very cool. So let's just get into it and run through the, this is so weird because we've already done this once. It's like, I know what the answers are going to be.
I know. I'll make up something new.
Sure. So where'd you grow up? New answer this time.
On Uranus. One of my favorite. No, okay. Too far. I grew up just north of where I live now. And thankfully, I've been blessed to have traveled around a bit since then and seen some of the world. But and we could talk more about why I'm back here if that's relevant. But I grew up north of here in north central Ohio. And I grew up deep in the woods because the house that I grew up in was basically a refuge that my dad stumbled upon in a rainstorm on his Harley as he was trying to just crash for the night. And the quick story of that is he finds this shack. He basically squats on the property. You know, he basically pushes his way into the shack, parks his bike in the middle of this one-room shack. It's got a potbelly stove there. And again, like I said, he squats on the property. He's basically, you know, as the term implies, you know, he's staying there without permission. And so eventually the landowner shows up for some reason and realizes that this guy is living in this shack on this property, on his property. And again, like I said, to make a long story short, they become friends. They're doing some drinking one night. They're playing cards around the potbelly stove. They're playing blackjack from the story that I understand. And stakes get a little high. My dad or him, I don't know who, somehow the property becomes part of the deal. And my dad wins. And the guy honors the bet. And so he wins the shack and the property.
So you grew up in a place that your dad acquired from squatting and gambling.
Yes.
This is already the makings of a great, like, Mark Twain novel.
It's I love telling the story because, you know, it's a different one than I hear from other people.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
And so dad obviously, you know, stayed on there, and he literally built that shack out into a pretty nice little house. And, you know, one room at a time. Honestly, it wasn't glamorous, but I didn't know any better as a kid. And I can still, having, you know, lived in a lot of places since and look back on that, say that was a fantastic house, very well built, heated by wood with a wood burner in the basement. And that potbelly stove still served us on the first floor. You know, we lived, like I said, in the middle of a woods. My dad found a spring down below the property that was obviously doing what the spring's supposed to do and putting water out. So he had that dug out, turned it into a pond, stocked it with fish. A creek ran beside the pond and the property. We ended up with about 24 acres of woods that we used for cutting wood, hunting, trapping, you know, being pretty self-sufficient like that. And, you know, this was the 70s, and it was a very different time that I think may never exist again. And I'm not trying to be dramatic, but the things that we did as kids growing up in that wilder environment, honestly, I don't know anybody personally anymore that raises their kids that way. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just saying I think it's a thing of it's a dying thing.
Sure.
The fact that we would sling 22s over our backs and ride bicycles for 8 hours at a time in the summertime, you know, literally two kids riding down the road on their banana seat bicycles with guns on their backs, you know, just riding around having fun.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen today.
Not really. No. I'm not sure I'd let my kids do that, you know, and I don't have kids, but if I did, you know, who knows, but I doubt it. So
no,
that's a slightly longer version than I intended to tell you, but that's how I grew up. And as I've told people a lot, as you know, I tell the Mingus Design story here in the past year, it was a pretty important thing to look back on. In fact, I think it was a critical factor of who I am today and even how it helps me run my business.
Sure.
And including how I do art. You know, including just to touch on it quickly, I did a recent Instagram post where I showed the Mingus Design logo as a vehicle for telling story. And it just happened that I just randomly drew trees into that. And somebody that I, a guy here in Columbus from a place called Ratchet Strategy said, why'd you draw trees? And I said, it's just built into me. You know, it's how I grew up. And I trust trees. I love trees. It's part of my being in a sense, right? So anyway, but I wouldn't trade that childhood for the world.
Somehow I just pictured, you know, when you were describing the whole story of the way you grew up and how your dad was this cross between Easy Rider, Deer Hunter, and Stranger Things.
Yeah, that's a pretty good mashup of things. Yeah, pretty accurate.
Aside from the supernatural and, upside down, you're you know, hanging in there with that.
Yeah, and you know, I think the Deer Hunter thing's interesting because it was maybe a little more Deer Hunter in the who was in the original movie.
Sorry, Ford, John Blank. Ford that, De Niro.
Yeah, De Niro, right? So that, you know, kind of the wilder side of Deer Hunter from the Vietnam perspective. That was my dad, you know, and he was coming back from Vietnam, a particular mission in Vietnam when he ended up in that area. So, yeah, he was really interested in checking out of the regular brand of society at that point. So
I can understand that.
All that wildness came into that place and stayed, you know, until we sold it when we were, you know, out of high school. So.
Gotcha. So when you were growing up, what, you know, aside from, you know, slinging guns over your shoulder, were you kind of an arty kid or?
I was, my dad is actually an artist. My mom has beautiful handwriting and can draw quite well. But my dad had been a painter, you know, and an art, teacher, college, level for some period off and on when he wasn't, you know, hopping back to Vietnam. Mm-hmm. But he was starting down that path. But so there's a little bit of art in the background there from the folks. And so as a kid, yeah, I was actually quite creative, and so was my brother. We did a lot of creative stuff. And again, being that far out and having zero access to anything digital because it didn't exist,
sure,
we had to depend on our imaginations. So I don't know if anybody listening to this can relate to this, but, you know, if we said to my, you know, my brother and I said to my folks, you know, we don't have anything to do, we were given chores.
Yeah.
So we found stuff to do, you know? Yeah. Okay. So we really did plug in our imaginations on a daily basis. You know, if we weren't in school and we weren't doing chores, which we had plenty of, we were making stuff. And that could be just, you know, boy stuff, you know, with building forts and shooting cans and, you know, for us as childhood, you know, it could be cutting wood or running trap lines or things like that. But it was also just very hands-on creative stuff, like tons of drawing that, you know, has rewarded us, you know, now in our careers for both my brother and I. My brother is a rock star at Caterpillar. He's designing stuff that's, you know, being used around the world. He has a mechanical engineering brain in addition to being a designer brain. I'm not as lucky or blessed as him. I just have the one side. I can draw, you know, among other things. But yeah, so my brother, you know, very early on learned taught himself how to draw cars from memory. You could say Ashley, my brother's name is Ashley. You could say Ashley, draw a 57 Chevy. And he'd render out this 57 Chevy and it was pretty accurate. And that he was eight, you know.
Yeah.
But I dabbled in drawing, like I said, photography. I had a crappy little 126 camera, and we would both build models. I would take my models and set up these little storyboards, and I would photograph the storyboards. And I remember one being something like it was a cop car chasing a car, you know, a hot rod, and of course the hot rod escapes and the cop car crashes and sets on fire. All this anti-authority stuff really early on, right?
But, so learning well from your dad.
A little bit of that, yeah.
Yeah. So you get through, you know, elementary school, middle school, high school and all that. What do you end up doing then? Do you go to college or do you go military? Or
I did. It's another tale of failure to a point. I went to Ohio State and again,
correction, the Ohio State.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So
I got corrected on it the other day. I had to correct somebody else on it.
I could truly waste 10 minutes of this program.
Oh, please don't. You
know, I won't. Verifying about how little I know about sports, but I won't. Just trust me, guys. I don't know much.
Neither do I. So it wouldn't take 10 minutes.
Yeah. So I went to the Ohio State University, and I started a major in landscape architecture. I was in an NROTC program with a Marine Corps option, and I hated it. And again, long story short there, I dropped out about 2 years into it, which devastated my folks for good reason. Mm-hmm. And at that time, again, based on how I was going through that program, there was money coming to me, so I owed them money. So I had a couple options, and I took the weirder option, and I decided to tear up the contract that I had with the NROTC program and I decided to go into the Marine Corps as an enlisted guy, as a regular enlisted guy with a brand new, fresh 4-year contract. So that's what I did. Mm-hmm. So here I am, a college dropout, off to the Marine Corps, Parris Island. I spent 4 years in the Marine Corps in Hawaii as a duty station after some time in Texas for training.
Yeah, that's not a bad MOS you got there.
It was pretty nice. And I went in open contract, which means you have no job assigned to you upon entry. And so I got my job assigned to me in Texas. Camp Lejeune. And then after Lejeune, I was assigned as a 5811, which is what put me in Texas for training. But anyway, so I was a cop, basically a grunt with a badge is what they call the 5811 field. Did that for 4 years. And again, Hawaii was great. I surfed every other day and never became a great surfer, but doesn't matter. I loved it. It's still in my blood. And I don't think it ever leaves your blood once you get down to the island and live there for a little while. But I also got married while I was there, and with Janet, who was back here in Ohio. She came out. We lived together out there. And then after that, I was ready to get out. It had been good to me, the Marine Corps, that is. Mm-hmm. And Hawaii, of course, had been very good to us.
Yeah.
And then I decided to come back to Columbus and go back to school, make another attempt at school. So I spent the next 4 years going to CCAD. And the reason I did 4 years at CCAD was because I was such a horrible student.
CCAD is Columbus College of Art and Design? Yeah.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yep. And the reason I, basically nothing transferred from the Ohio State University because I was the worst student they probably had in a long time.
Hey, I took, my first year in college ended with them asking me politely to leave and take some time to find myself, which I did. Nice. So I understand. I understand that bad student the first time around part.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that it worked out that way. Again, it was devastating to my folks, like I said, but the second time around, it was my money and it was my time and I made good. I was a good student the second time.
Gotcha. So with your dad being in the military, especially during Vietnam, how did he feel about you enlisting?
He wasn't a big fan, and so the slightly longer version of his military career was that he is a Korea combat vet. He's 86. He'll be 87 here in a few months. He's a Korea combat vet, multiple experiences in combat. He's got a metal wall that's pretty impressive, and that comes at a price. My dad's a pretty amazing guy, and I know that word amazing gets thrown around a lot, but my dad is I shouldn't say pretty amazing. He's a truly amazing human being for the things that he did and the things that he survived. Mm-hmm. So because of all that experience, his experience, when both my brother who went to the Army and myself who went to the Marine Corps made those decisions, he was not a very happy person about it. I remember him saying that if I could do something to keep you boys out of there, I'd do it. But he also was extremely proud of us for making the decision too. So, really a lot of duality there happening when we both decided. Off I went. And I'm, again, I'm glad I did it. I know it's not for everybody. I have a good friend who laments never going into the military. And I've said to him before, and I say it to anybody, if you look back on that and wish you had, then go be of service some other way. There's plenty of ways to be useful and be of service to people. So that's just one way. And that way you happen to end up killing people in the same time or potentially. But so it's a little different than your, typical service job. But in all seriousness, there's plenty of opportunities for people. So
sure.
Go get to it.
Gotcha. So you're at CCAD. You get through, you're taking design classes and all that stuff. What do you end up doing straight out of college?
So while I was in college, I took on a job with a company called Solid Light. And this is back in the 90s. And their bread and butter was mostly t-shirts. It was Christian promotional materials. And back then, that was really cool. And they were doing well. And they only had one. So that was Columbus, Ohio. And they had one big competitor out in Oregon called Living Epistles, who I think is still in business. But bottom line is I cut my design teeth while I was in school doing t-shirt art. And I loved it. It was a great company, great people. I'm still friends with those guys and many of those folks. Still keep in touch on a regular basis. So I was doing that while I was in school. And then once I got out of school, I just flowed right into that place as a full-time job. Because, again, I've been there for a couple years, part-time. And like I said, good people, fun work. And off we went. So that was my first gig out of college, was doing more screen printing work, more art for screen printing.
Okay. So you do your tour of service at the t-shirt printing company, making, I think the first time around you told me it was a lot of Christian music t-shirts as well, too, for like Christian bands and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was quite a range, yeah.
So what do you end up doing after that?
So after that was, after this very, in a lot of ways, very analog experience, with screen printing. We were obviously doing stuff, I'm not old enough to have done a ton of Ruby Lith stuff. We were cutting stuff on the computer and spitting it out.
You learned how to do Ruby Lith. That doesn't mean you did Ruby Lith.
Right. I was right on that edge. So yeah. I'm okay with that, believe me, from what I understand.
Yeah.
So, but what's interesting is that I got itchy feet and I decided to join a company called Out of the Box. And at that time, Out of the Box was this weird mix of interactive and traditional print media all mashed together, which at the time was fairly unique. And this is back in the late 90s. These guys have been around for a few years doing very early interactive work. Mm-hmm. And so when Out of the Box kind of reformed in 2000, they brought a bunch of folks together, crazy talented team of people, bigger space. And it was my first foray into a real agency experience. And it was a great experience. Unfortunately, it was also the .com bust. So,
build it up to break it down. Yeah.
Yeah. So, our $8,000 refrigerator that was, full of booze supposedly for the client, didn't always end up in the client's hands. And, we had a lot of fun. It was, we did a lot of great work, but the reality was, not necessarily our fault. And I think some our fault, to be clear. Things were falling apart around us.
Sure.
Clients weren't paying and that whole, and literally we were truly part of the .com bust. So it was pretty devastating, to tell you the truth. And again, same scenario with Out of the Box as with Solid Light. Lots of great people there that I still keep in touch with. And Columbus, for being what I hear is around 2 million people now, including the Outer Belt, mm-hmm. It's still a pretty small town in a lot of ways, even though we're now, truly a big city. And it's great to say that those relationships still matter to me. And mm-hmm. I've worked with those people in different places since.
Gotcha. So the .com bust hits, you end up folding up shop there and moving on. At what point do you end up going out on your own?
Well, the first time I tried to do it was in 2004.
Okay.
And I went to a place here in town, big ad agency, that just kept getting bigger, for all the right reasons, but it got bigger and bigger because it focused on healthcare. Mm-hmm. And, we also say pharma, but it's kind of a dark word. So we just we say healthcare now. Again, for all kinds of good reasons, lots of great folks there doing smart things. They asked me to come on board and do some contract work. Mm-hmm. So I went into that contract with the idea that, okay, I'm going to roll on my own now for a while. Cause I'd been in a few agencies at that point and, including Out of the Box, a couple of small places. And I thought, all right, I've got a pretty good handle on things, several years in here. So the reality of that was this went from contract to full time when I realized that, again, this is healthcare and it pays well. And I saw a lot of good people there around me who had come from Out of the Box that were now at GSW, including the guy who offered me the job, a guy named Jeremy Rosario, who's here in Columbus, incredibly talented guy. He's the one that one of the guys that I work with at Out of the Box. He's the guy who walked up to me and said, we'd like to bring you on full time. And I thought, gosh, I love this guy. Again, multiple people around him in this place that are from Out of the Box that I love working with. Why wouldn't I? There was all kinds of good reasons to stay there. So that became a long-term gig of several years and two different stints. And to kind of roll along through that timeline, mm-hmm. I went from GSW and then I went to Resource Interactive, which was at that time and still is for the most part a truly dedicated interactive company at resource.com if anybody wants to check that out. Great company, ran by some super smart folks, and After Resource, I took a wild break and went and taught college. I just left agency life for a couple of years and taught school with a guy named Tim Frame, who I think you've met.
I've met Tim.
Yep. So went out and joined Tim at a small college just west of here and did that for a couple of years.
Let me interrupt you there, because most colleges don't let you teach without a master's. Did you go back and get your master's at some point?
Oh, yeah. Great question. So I loved it. It was a great gig. As anybody who's taught knows, you don't do it for the money.
Sure.
To make a giant understatement there. But but what happened was, during the time I was there, apparently there were some federal level changes coming through that required guys like me who were teaching with a bachelor's degree to get a master's. So they had an agreement at the time that was agreed to in the state of Ohio that said, if a person has a bachelor's degree and so many years of experience, we'll allow that person to teach at the college level. Mm-hmm. But again, those rules changed. So they came to me and they said, hey, look, if you want to stick around, we're going to have you get a master's degree. And I said, okay. So I looked into it. I saw it was crazy expensive. Yeah. And went back to them and said, guys, I love this. You know that. I love these kids. I love what we're doing. Can I get a little help? And they said, you know, it's just not in the books right now. And I said, understood. Let me think about it. And then I realized, you know, it just didn't feel like it was meant to be. And I didn't want to take on that kind of debt, which sounds horribly hypocritical when you're standing in front of students who are taking on a $30,000 a year debt for their own education.
Sure. Well, I mean, you had already put yourself through undergrad, though, so that was an amount of debt that you had to take on to be able to do that. So I can understand. I don't think that's being hypocritical. I think that's being realistic.
Yeah. Yeah. So I left and I went back. I looked at a couple of their options, including going back to Resource and going back to GSW. Chose GSW, and I stayed there for a couple years working directly for Eli Lilly on their oncology account. Mm-hmm. And then moved across, literally across the street, to a sister company owned by the same entity. And that company is called Navicor. So yeah, it's a monster. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way necessarily. And there's, you know, again, I'll be frank and say there's really awful things about that kind of scale when you're working for a company that, you know, deals in the millions and millions and there's benefits. Things like when you're doing an identity project, you don't have to ask about the budget because you know it's a six-figure budget for an identity project. Mm-hmm. Imagine that as a freelancer or, you know, a small business.
I would like someone to send one of those my way.
Yeah, I'll take two a year, you know, and I'll do it from Costa Rica, from my, you know, mansion in Costa Rica.
Exactly.
So again, there's wonderful perks there. And anybody that's worked that scene knows that money is one of them. And the benefits are great. And again, they can afford to hire top talent in those places. And to tell you the truth, you know, a lot of people who've worked in that or have heard of it will tell you that, it's pharma and it's just, there's nothing good about it. And I can spend a lot of time. I can chew up the rest of this podcast talking about a lot of the good work that we did, mm-hmm. including one of the last jobs that I did at Navicor, for a company called Tesaro. We did a video that I won't go into a lot of detail about, but because it's actually a beautiful story. It's also a very sad story, but I'll tease it and stop there and say that it was really powerful work that went straight to patients. And it wasn't pushing a drug per se in that piece that we did, but it was a very cool and, again, incredibly highly emotional piece that really spoke to patients where they were about chemotherapy and some of the side effects. So, I'll put it this way. If anybody out there wants to see this, I have a link to it on my Dropbox and I'm happy to share that. I promise you can't, it's one of those Dropbox links that I'd have to recite it, you know, because it's so complicated. But I'm willing to share the work because
I tell you what, you send me that and I'll put it up in the show notes. And then if people want to see it, they can click on it to take a look at it. How about that? That way you don't have to worry about reciting it and you can let people see it.
Yeah. And, you know, get a Kleenex before you watch it. I promise. I sat in the editing booth and I watched that thing 60 times before we wrapped a 2-minute video. And I watched it the other day as I was, talking to somebody about some of the work that we'd done. And I watched it and it's really hard for me to not choke up watching that 2 minutes.
I can imagine. So the company that I work for, I mean, we're an engineering firm, but one of our big sectors that we deal with is and we still call it pharma. We have no problem calling it pharma in the engineering world, but it's fine. Sure. Pharma and biopharm and, you know, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but Monsanto is one of our clients. Now we don't do the GM. Well, it does give me an appreciation for understanding that not all GMO is as evil as people think it is. Human beings have been doing GMO since forever. Just if you look at the stuff that we learn in, you know, high school about Gregor Mendel, that's genetically modifying crops. It's just a different way of doing it. But everybody thinks of it in these different ways. The vast majority of GMO stuff is literally you're just cross-pollinating and coming up with things to make them naturally, without any chemicals involved, you know, more resistant to different things, which people have been doing for centuries.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Janet and I went vegan a couple years back, and you know the joke about vegans, right? How do you know there's a vegan in the room?
How?
Don't worry. They'll find you and they'll tell you.
Oh, jeez.
And see, I just said it on the podcast. So there you go. It didn't take long, did it? But we also try to do a lot of reading and find balance in all these things. And what you just described is the same thing we've read in our research, that, you know, there are things that Monsanto does that, you know, are not evil and that are actually trying to find good in crops. And,
yeah,
but, you know, people make it sound like they're all wearing these hooded robes they're standing around a pentagram, you know, every time they come up with a new solution. I mean, come on, you know?
Yeah, no,
I get it. There's some bad stuff there, but let's look at the total picture.
Right? Yeah. There's some bad stuff, but there's some really good stuff. And you're working for Navcor. And correct me if I'm wrong, you'd moved fairly high up. You were VP of design at that before you left there?
Yeah, I was a VPCD by pay and title, and working on a couple three accounts at that point. Mm-hmm. And my primary job there was doing completely interactive. That's why I was hired to walk across to Navcor and you know help grow that business for them, which is what we did. And again, not just by myself, a guy named Phil Storer, a guy named Rod Parsons, the three of us, and we're working with a project manager named Maddie Frangos, who was awesome. And the four of us in total were this team that was there to build the interactive. Mm-hmm. That's what we did. You know, we were there for a few years and all sat together, crammed in one office, which was intentional and awesome and a great idea, even though I didn't think so at first. we were a fire hazard of, you know, too many things plugged into too few outlets. And we had a great time and did some awesome stuff. So
gotcha.
It was a good gig. But I needed to move on at some point, and that moving on became, of course, launching Mengus Design about a year ago.
What was it that made you finally decide that you needed to move on?
Well, there's a lot of things, but a couple things happened on the way to that decision. And one of those things was a freelance job that my friend Ryan Scott put in my lap about a year before I left. And he said, I got a contact out in Subaru of America on the East Coast, and who's mm-hmm. In charge of all the marketing out there. And I want to do an app with them. And that's what we're working on. Would you be interested? And I said, no, it's a horrible idea. No, seriously. I said, of course, we'll do something for Subaru. Why not? Because he knew I was a Subaru guy. You know, Ryan's got a company called UbiView, UbiView.com. Mm-hmm. And so Ryan was getting that moving. And you know, the spin on the app was that we could do 360 video inside mm-hmm. the app. So which Ryan was working on. And so the cool thing about that, and the reason it was so significant, was that here it was Ryan doing the video, myself doing the interactive design for the app, a team called Finway who were awesome, and our contact at Subaru of America. That's all it took to create the very first app for Subaru Motorsports. And having worked in larger agencies, including my pharma experience for so long, you know, it's pretty significant when you can create something for a company that big in a very short window of time, have fun doing it, do it and meet budget, neat timeline, and create something that hits the app stores and gets good reviews. So basically, mm-hmm. we pulled this whole thing off in 2 months, start to finish.
Wow, that's amazing on that time frame.
Right, it really was. And again, you know, Ryan gets the lion's share of the credit there, to use that cliche phrase, but it's true. He's a super organized guy and just a great guy to work with. And I'm not getting paid to say that. I did get paid to say that to a point when I was working with him. In all seriousness, he's tremendous. I can't say enough good about him. So he really drove a great product there. But that was significant. And the second and last thing that was a real push for me was that I started out, and really kind of born out of frustration, I started doing some side projects just here at the house. Mm-hmm. And those projects were things that I just love to do. And let me put that differently. When I say love to do, I mean, this is what I discovered, is I started doing things that would keep me up at night without eating, losing sleep, and yet I was energized and rolling on those things until late into the night, which was not happening in my day job. Mm-hmm. Meaning I wasn't doing the late day job stuff and feeling energized at 11 o'clock at night. But I did a couple of projects that were really odd little things. But again, they were significant in making me think, wait a second, I love doing this stuff and I don't do it anymore. But I also understood something very important, which was, it wasn't that I just loved to do it, because again, I can go out and paint rocks and love to do it. But I was doing things that people were reminding me that, wow, you know, this is really your strength. And it's pretty awesome. And it's an incredible blessing to have people telling you that directly and saying, look, you're really good at that. You know, you really ought to do that. Why don't you do more of that? That kind of conversation.
Sure.
So, again, between the Subaru app then and then doing these side projects, I started thinking, both those things are so positive. What about doing this on a full-time basis? So, you know, fast forward from where I mentioned the first attempt at 2004 to do this.
Sure.
Here I am in, you know, 2015 thinking, or actually this was 2014 thinking, okay, I think this is possible. So that was those were the two biggest things that started that conversation in my head.
Mm-hmm. So when you left to, you know, pursue Mengus Design full-time, did you built up enough client base where you could feel comfortable and not have to worry jumping out there? Or did you kind of take a leap of faith and know that it would come?
It was a bit of both. And when I tell you part of the story, some people are going to think I'm nuts. Well, that's okay. the thing that wasn't nuts, and some of my, you know, one of the best things I can tell people who are listening to this and saying, man, I wish I could do that, or I want to do that, or I'm in the works of doing that right now, is I sat down with people that I really trust, that know me really well. And I won't name all of them, but a few key people that I knew wouldn't let me play Silverback Ape, and I knew they would tell me the straight scoop. And what I was asking was, tell me what I don't know about running a business, because they were doing it. They were not freelancers. They were small agency people here in town with mm-hmm. tremendous success. One had done it many years, and one had done it for about five. The one who'd done it for going on 5 years at that point was actually that person was who would turn out to be, I already knew it would be, my fiercest competitor in town, or one of them, but also a very good friend of mine that I worked with at the Christian T-shirt company years ago. So almost 20 years ago. So I went to him and I said, okay, dude, tell me what I don't know. And he gave me some very brutally honest advice. And also some extremely useful advice that I'm happy to share with anybody now, because I, you know, why not share it? It's great stuff. It saved me tons of time and research. So that was the smart thing that I did, was sit down with those people and say, okay, I don't know anything, which is the truth. Tell me what I don't know. And they were happy to share their knowledge, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. The wild part and the crazy part, and what may sound really reckless to people, was that although I'd had a freelance base of people, the wild thing I did was I didn't have any particular job lined up on day one when Mengus Design launched. I didn't have a client standing there going, yep, we're ready. When are you going to quit so we can start this thing? Didn't exist. Mm-hmm. But what I did do was a lot of planning up till then. So again, because of the conversations I had with people, I got the LLC set up. I got, you know, tax stuff figured out. I got the URL purchased. This was months in advance. The big thing I did was I was securing money, you know, and making sure I had a nest egg set up. So that happened, and that's a huge blessing and a critical thing I realized, you know, now, mm-hmm. realized then and now. to have that base. And again, anybody listening, I'm telling you, if you don't have that, you're a fool. It's just not wise. I mean, there's things that I still do that aren't necessarily wise, but I can promise you, don't do this unless you've built up some type of financial cushion. And again, that's not rocket science information. I mean, you can read that anywhere, but it's very true and very valid information, advice. So the day I launched, I had a lot of things in place. I had a logo created. I had an identity in the works, which, you know, as you know, always gets tuned. It's never really truly done.
No. But, well, and I'm sure like most people who own their own business and there are freelancers, you're probably your own worst client when it comes to that too.
Oh, the worst. Absolute worst. Yeah.
Hey, I still don't have a website for my company. So, you know, go figure that.
No surprise. And don't take that the wrong way. My website at Mingus.design, I hate it. It's temporary. It's been a temporary site for a year, and that's embarrassing. I put my work on Instagram, and you know, by the time this podcast gets out there, I pray that's not still true. That the only good avenue of seeing my work is Instagram. But I'm trying to get that done. it is painful. What's cool though is on day one, I wasn't just sitting here twiddling my thumbs. I think I was working on the identity stuff, and among six other things. And I got a phone call from a guy who used to be at Navicorp. And he said, hey, I've got some he had moved on to a different pharma agency out in the East Coast, a guy named Bruce, great guy that I worked with there, and fellow creative director. And he said, hey, would you take on some work? And again, this is day one. And I said, what do you got? And he goes, well, you know, I'm at this pharma place. And as soon as he said that, I start glazing over. I'm thinking, no, I don't want to do pharma anymore, you know? And I love this guy. He's great to work with, but that's not why I didn't start Mingus Design to do more pharma work necessarily, right? But the cool thing was, it turns out that Bruce was on a great team, nice chunk of work, basically some Photoshop comps, some conceptual work for some campaign they were working on. And again, like I've said twice, he's a great guy to work with. We had fun doing it, paid well. It was a great way to launch things. And day one, I got things rolling with some business that I never set up, never expected. And I'll cut to the chase and tell you that this past year, I haven't sought work from anybody in the entire, just over the year mark, which was September. The entire year has been people just like Bruce saying, hey, got some work. You interested? Got some work. How about this? I got some stuff I need you to do. Would you like to do this? And, you know, I can tell you, it's been an incredible blessing to say I've had to turn some things away. Not a lot, but it's pretty powerful, you know, and rewarding, and I guess you could say humbling, you know, to say that people have been calling, and that's really cool. So
now, are you like me, where even though you're turning stuff away, you're still second guessing yourself after the fact?
Oh, sure, yeah, but I also. I am sometimes a couple things I've turned away. I thought, oh, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, but I can honestly say that I've turned things away based on principles that I want for this business. Mm-hmm. So, and in each of the two or three things that I've turned away were because I was not just trusting my gut, which is a very vague thing in some ways, but I was seeing something there that didn't align with how I wanted to run my business. And, again, those are very concrete, you know, bullet point type things that I knew that I wanted to do from the start. And so it wasn't difficult to turn those things away. And again, you know, like I said, the blessing of what's happened in the past year is that as those doors close, or I close those doors intentionally, I'm blown away by the intricate and unscripted timing of things where the next job lands at just the right time. And right behind that comes the check that I didn't expect at that particular time, you know, from the job that I'd finished before that. So, you know, anybody listening to this that's done this for a long time is probably tuning this out at this point, because they're like, yeah, dude, welcome to the world of, you know, running a small agency. Which, you know, again, having done this for 18 years for somebody else, or 19 years, you'd think I'd be, you know, fully aware of it. But it's a radically different deal when it's your baby and you're wearing all six hats to run this thing.
I've talked to enough people. That's you're a bit of an exception to the rule. Most people are out there busting their butt. I mean, not that you're not busting your butt on the work that you're doing and all that, but they're busting their butt every day trying to find work as well. And, you know, so to have stuff coming to you, especially this, you know, because what, Mengus Design is, well, you're coming up on your 2-year mark now, aren't you?
No, just 1 year. Yeah.
Just 1 year?
Just
okay.
Hit the year mark in September.
Okay. For some reason, I was thinking you were getting closer to the two. Yeah. So you've just passed the year mark. To have that coming in to you at this point, I think, you know, I think probably is more not, and don't take this the wrong way when I say this, not a testament to your work, but probably more of a testament to your character and relationships that you've built where people are willing to go to bat for you and say, hey, we should, you know, work with Dylan on this, you know, and things like that. Then, because I mean, and again, don't take this wrong, there's tons of great designers out there who aren't having that luck. So I think that the fact that you have that stuff coming in really is probably more of a testament to the fact that you have a lot of people who want to work with you because of who you are, not because of what you do.
Well, you know what? Thanks, man. I hope it's true. You know, I do. I know that both things are true. I know how to work. And again, that goes back to the childhood thing. You know, we learned how to work. And again, I can burn a lot of time in going into deep description about what it's like to cut wood all summer to heat your house through the winter. You know, just, you could probably start doing a little math on your own and figure out that it's not easy.
No.
You know, we trapped animals, not because, you know, we were weird, you know, old timey folk. It's because we made money from it. It was income. And whether or not you agree with trapping or hunting, you know, that's a whole other discussion. The reality is, we grew up in a way that was, you know, where we learned how to work, and that work paid us back. And I'll give you a really fast example. It's one of my favorite examples from that childhood, and I'll move on from it, I promise. But
sure.
When you cut wood for a living, you know, to support your family, not for a living, but you're cutting wood to support your family, which means, and let me tell you exactly what that means. That means I had a chainsaw when I was 10, and my brother had a chainsaw when he was 10, his own, and my dad had a chainsaw, and you took care of your own chainsaw. So that's how serious we were about cutting wood. But in the course of cutting wood through the summertime, the practices that my dad taught us, because he's this wonderful conservationist and always has been. It's just a beautiful thing when you dive deeper into the layers underneath, you know, looking past things like, oh, you're cutting wood to heat. Right. But so the example is, when you're cutting wood in the summertime, you got to do something with those branches. You got two choices. You can just dump them where they fall, or you can do something with them. So what Dad taught us to do was, all you did was you just piled the branches in a nice, neat, you know, little dome. That's all you had to do. Mm-hmm. And then a few months later in the fall, all you had to do for a fast rabbit for food was set up a cone of fire with, you know, two or three people, or yourself if you were, you know, feeling lucky. And you'd set up that cone of fire. One person would walk up to that brush pile that you made back in the summertime, put 1 foot on it, was about all it took, and out came the rabbits. And bang go the guns, and you're walking home with dinner. It was about that fast. So
wow.
There was this circle of life and death, you know, to be complete about it, that we were taught and we used and implemented, you know, throughout that. So again, I'm going off on a long tangent there, but that kind of childhood, you know, especially the work part of it, was integral to you know, how I work now. So,
well, I mean, it sounds like, you know, your parents put a good deal of effort into developing your work ethic as well as your respect for things.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
So I think that's what's probably shining through.
Yeah, well, you know, going back to your comments about working with people, that's a very accurate assessment. The past year has been all about, you know, getting calls from people that I've known over the years. And some new folks too, which is of course, you know, really nice. But I could draw a schematic of how a few of the jobs this past year have connected to each other. And, you know, I mentioned a resource earlier in the podcast, the resource.com place, and they were one of the first big jobs that has become part of that schematic, where Resource called me to come in and do some work in their new space here in Columbus. And that led to work with, guys named Kaufman Development here in town. Really, really awesome company that builds and manages what they build. So yeah, the things start to, you know, kind of ping pong off of each other in terms of people that I know and connections to those jobs. And the resource connection became a link to the Sherwin-Williams job that I just did here about a month ago. So, you know, Sherwin-Williams is going to do their Color of the Year announcement for 2017. And Resource said, hey, we know this guy that, you know, can do a lot of hand lettering and has done it, you know, in our space for a pretty good amount of time with people walking all around him while he does it. He's pretty comfortable in doing that. So he might be a good guy to film drawing out the name of your Color of the Year for 2017.
Oh, God, so, that would be so nerve-wracking for
and
me.
And again, this is... Oh, it was fun. And, you know, a guy named Todd over at Resource did a fantastic job with the direction of this thing. And, you know, we got this thing done super tight. The whole thing start to finish about 4 days. And the shoot took about 3 hours. Again, thanks to his organization, his team, the account side and project management, they were awesome. Again, I can't say enough wonderful things about Resource. They've been so good to me this year. But so that's what we did. I got in front of the camera and I lettered this thing out. And they did a time lapse with a GoPro behind me and did a real nice job stitching it all together and wrapping it up. But, you know, again, that job came out of just a multiple connections of people. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll say it three times, you know, I'm just incredibly thankful for their business. And then, you know, I hope I can continue to go in there and meet expectations and get stuff done on time and you know, keep this ball rolling. Right.
Right. So, you know, since you've been doing this for a year, well, actually, let me go back. One thing I wanted to ask you was, you know, when you made the leap, I mean, obviously you discussed it with your wife, but how did she feel about it when you first brought the idea to her of going out?
Well, it wasn't the most positive conversation. The reality of me opening Mingus Design was that back here at the Mingus house, Janet was also looking to make a job, and she'd been working in a prison for 20 years. And I got to say that very, very clearly. Janet had been working in a prison for 20 years.
Okay, she was not in prison.
Not in a prison. Yeah. So
she was free to leave the prison while the others were not.
That's right.
She was paid to be there.
That's right. But she, as a forensic psychologist, had done that for a long time and was ready to make a change. So I said, okay, let's get you changed first and then me. But mm-hmm. the reason that there was a little tension here was that I didn't wait too long after she made the change and to pull the trigger.
You didn't wait long enough for her comfort.
I could have waited a little longer. The good news is that, you know, Janet's seen it in the past year, like we were just talking about in the last several minutes here. You know, things are going well and some good planning and some blessings and all that combined have you know, meant that things are on a good roll here. But yeah, it was, I probably moved a little too quickly to launch for her. So yeah, wasn't the easiest thing to do. wasn't the smoothest transition. Let's put it that way.
You know, you think you would have picked up a thing or two after being married for that long to a psychologist that maybe you should have waited. I mean, I'm not saying that it didn't work out well for you, but
I don't know how
at least
say it.
That you weren't going to win the argument there.
Yeah, I truly. And I'll tell you this. I'll put it this way. I am a really blessed man. Janet is an amazing person. And I'm not saying that because she's going to hear this podcast and that's going to, you know, just because I want her to hear that. I mean, it's really true. I'm a very blessed guy. I don't deserve her. She's the best. And she's been a part of this business, not just, you know, obviously at some point saying, okay, let's do it. But more importantly, Janet has an incredible amount of creative ability for someone who's trained as a forensic psychologist and has no design training. Mm-hmm. She understands spatial organization, color theory, design principles, and you can easily say, well, she's heard that stuff from you for years. There's some truth in that. But I know from watching her and listening to her over the long haul that she inherently understands these things. She just has been blessed with those gifts, just like, you know, us other designer, you know, people have too. And in sure. ways that, again, she understands things about design that I've never explained to her, but she can articulate that stuff. So, mm-hmm. you know, this business is very much my business, but she's a very integral part of it in that way. I love being able to bounce stuff off of her and say, you know, what do you think about this? And the feedback I get from her is as good as any creative director that I've worked for. And that's saying a lot, but it's the truth.
Cool. Very cool. So what does the future hold for Mengus Designs?
Well, we don't really know, to tell you the truth. There's the super honest answer. The slightly longer answer is, looking back on the past year, I have to do that to kind of, you know, answer that question.
Sure.
And when I look back on the past year, we've got, you know, the Subaru of America app that I did before Mengus Design. We just relaunched that with an updated version in a lot of ways, a lot of cool ways. Again, Ryan did a great job of just getting that back on its feet. And we did some tuning on the design. And now we've got a peeled back. Ryan brought in another camera so that when you're watching these guys race these rally cars in 360, it looks like there's no roof on the car. So you can actually just, you know, move your phone around or move your goggles around and watch these guys talk and interact inside the car and still see the entire skyline, which is wild. Anyway, so we relaunched that. I did a logo for Mozilla, that Mozilla out in San Francisco. And that was through another great connection.
I like the fact that you had to say that Mozilla out there. I was like, is there another one?
Well, it's like, that was a fascinating job because I didn't know much about Mozilla. And they are a really cool company that does way more than just code stuff for the web. And
really?
Yeah, they it's worth digging into. But so I got that work through a really cool company here in town called Bonfire Red, some really cool guys, Chris and Joey, that run that. We also work with S77, Reiner, who runs S77. So we all came together and I did the identity work, and then Reiner did some video work. Bonfire Red built a website, and it's for this thing called openwebgames.com. And it's a pretty cool site. You should take a look at it. Recommend it.
I will definitely take a look, and I'll put that up in the show notes too.
Yeah, cool. So, you know, and so we got Subaru of America. The Mozilla thing came around actually before we relaunched Subaru. The resource work has been incredible, like I said earlier, and has led to working with Kaufman Development, who's a huge developer here in Columbus. And then there's some other, hopefully, some new work pending with them here soon. And, you know, the Sherwin-Williams thing happened. And in between all those things, there have been some other identity jobs and some other illustration jobs. I'm working on one right now for a local agency called Ology. And just for the, you know, for the record, I'm not a freelancer. I love to work direct for client, but I've taken on a couple of these agency jobs. So in the case of resource, that is a direct to client. They are my client. I'm not working, you know, through them for somebody else, except when we did the Sherwin-Williams job. Ology is the same thing. They're a design agency, a marketing advertising agency here in town, but they got wind of what I did for Resource. They brought me in to do an interior wall there, which has been a really cool project. I'm really excited to share that, but I just can't talk about it yet until we get some stuff on the wall, which will probably be next week. Working with a great client there. So I tell you all that because when I started this business, I thought my bread and butter is going to be logo work, identity design. That's going to be how I'm going to make money because that's what I'm really good at. I know that. And those side projects that I was doing on my own before I launched Mengus Design, you know, which I didn't go into detail about, but they were not identity jobs. They were drawn on walls. And then the other one was I made a totem pole out of discarded cell phones and devices. And it's still in my basement because I don't know.
We talked about that last time.
Right. So, there's a totem pole that is human sized, built out of a 4-inch steel pipe with a horribly overbuilt steel base. And attached to it, including arms out to the side, are many discarded iPhones and HTC device, all kinds of discarded phones and devices. There's an old VCR head in there. There's all kinds of stuff. And it's all painted up with Molotov markers to look like this Native American thing. But when you look at it for a half a second longer, you realize, oh, those are all cell phones and other devices. So anyway, when I started Mengus Design, I knew that it would be identity design. And the reality is, about half the work's been identity design, and the other half have been these interior design jobs or other jobs that are, you know, neither of the first two that I never anticipated. And it's been incredibly rewarding work. not just the pay, which is great, you know, because I, again, I can spend some time talking about some really good practices that I've employed from day one that, that helped me get paid and paid properly and on time.
But we'll have you back on to talk about those.
Sweet. Yeah, because that's some really important stuff, actually. But the jobs are very fulfilling. I'm working with great people who are trusting me to do what I do well. And we're collaborating on these designs too, on many of them, not all of them, but some of them. And that's rewarding. So to go back to the original question of what happens to Menga's design next, I really don't know, because this interior stuff, this interior design, the wall design stuff has been a wonderful surprise. What may be in the future for us is a huge job that I really can't talk about, but it's a massive creative undertaking that would be a retainer job here in Columbus for a developer that's here in town. And we'll see, you know, we'll see. But I think one thing that's really important to share that is really important to answering the question, and probably the most important thing I can say, is that there's a thing that popped into my head three months ago, one day, and it was simply this phrase, by prayer and plow.
Mm-hmm.
And so if anybody follows my Instagram, you've probably seen that in a couple ways on my Instagram feed, because I couldn't help but letter it out. And I couldn't help it because it's become so important and so integral to my daily operations. And so to explain that quickly, because I hope it's fairly straightforward, when the phrase hit me, I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then I realized that's how I'm running this business.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel like it was one of those little nuggets that God drops in your lap and goes, hey, you need to chew on this for a little bit and think about this a little more deeply. And again, what it means is the plow thing is what it sounds like. It's the work. And you know, half or more of this business is just doing the work, whether it's client work or, you know, the invoicing. It's wearing the six hats that I got to wear to run this business, including mm-hmm. making the designs for the client. And then the other half of this, you know, the prayer part of it is simply that. I mean, I don't know what happens a year from now. I don't know what happens 2 months from now. I am planning towards those things. I am trying to figure out who to approach about work in case things really dry up. So it's not like I'm sitting back, you know, just waiting for the phone to ring. Again, such a blessing to say that's been the past year. But moving forward, I am being really faithful about what jobs to take and, you know, what happens next. Again, like I said, meanwhile, I'm doing the work. And, you know, when I get that anxiety, because I'll tell you, man, I get that anxiety mm-hmm. about, you know, when that check's going to come, you know, what's that next job going to be? This one's starting to drag out a little bit. Okay, that's making me anxious. I mean, this isn't a panacea. I get anxiety just like everybody else. And I have worries and things that wake me up at 4:30 in the morning, you know, unfortunately. But mm-hmm. those are the times when the prayer part of this really becomes part of how I run my business. And I just stop and go, okay, I don't know where to go with this or what to do with it. So I'm asking for some clarification, you know, a little bit of guidance here. And I'm not talking about lightning bolts in my lap, but I can say it's remarkable how in that unscripted mode where I am willing to give up, you know, this sense of control, which is kind of a lie all by itself, to assume that you're always in control. I've learned that the hard way over the last couple of years. But once I've resigned that control and been more faithful about that thing, again, continuing to do the work through that faith, I can say it has been a remarkable year that way, to see how those, you know, what some people would say, oh, that's a coincidence how that happened. Okay, mm-hmm. cool. I'll let you call it that, you know, but I'm telling you, I'm standing here in the middle of this and going, that timing is way too interesting and way too intricate to call that a coincidence, in my opinion,
sure.
in my experience. So, you know, to make a very long answer a little bit longer, that's how I look at the year going forward is, you know, we're going to do it by prayer and plow. That's how it's going to happen. That's and again, if that sounds vague to somebody, I'd be happy to talk in detail about some of that stuff, including some of the hands-on logistics of how I run this business, because that's, like I said, you know, if anybody's flaking, or, you know, I shouldn't say flaking out, they're glazing over about, oh, he's talking about prayer. All right. If you don't want to talk about prayer, that's cool. But I can tell you about the work part of it, the plow part, and how that, you know, really gets done. And I got a system. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I'll tell you what, it's working so far. So
That's hey,
as long as it's working, that's the important part.
Yeah.
Well, I think that is a great place to wrap it up. Cool. So why don't we tell people where they can find more of you online?
So I have a account on Twitter at Mengus Design. So that's at M-E-N-G-E-S Design. I have a site that is in horrible need of updating. And by the next Ice Age, I will fix that site and get some real work up there, more work. And that's at Mengus. That's www.mengus.design. And the best place to reach me until then is on Instagram, which is also just like the Twitter account. It's at Mengus Design. So Instagram.com/Mengus Design. And you'll find me there. And that's where I post everything from my new idea about posting my wake and make little stuff or to client work to, you know, whatever. So, but that's about the most recent stuff you're going to find.
Awesome. Well, Dylan, thank you again for taking the time to talk with me for the second, well, technically third time, if you want to count WMC Fest.
Yeah, that's right. We're getting good at this, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe?
Oh, okay. One more and I'm going to have to hire you on. I appreciate you taking the time. And would you mind taking us out like you did last time?
Yeah, you bet. I know what to say. And I'm going to add to it. You guys, you got to go to Creative South next year because it rocks. And hug some necks.
Awesome. Dylan, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
You can find out more about Dylan on Twitter at Mengus Design. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Head over to RealThread.com today and tell them Creative South Podcast sent you in the checkout, or when you talk to your account executive to get up to $100 off your next order. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. Don't forget to head over to CreativeSouthGA.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/creativesouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.